You're listening to Wins Above Fantasy, part of the Pitcherless Podcast Network with Van Burnett and Steve Gisuelli.
Welcome back, everybody. It is Wins Above Fantasy, episode 67, Thursday, August 4th, which means this is our first show, Steve, coming off of the trade deadline. Of course, the dust is settling. We're trying to keep up with all the action and listening to the rest of the industry get fired up about this too. So we got a great show today, guys. Thanks so much for joining. We're going to be talking about a little bit our deadline reaction and then getting into some deeper names where opportunities might have popped up, maybe some below the radar moves that could have a fantasy impact. Looking forward to it, Steve. And honestly, it's kind of a wild episode because you could go in any direction. So I think we'll keep it a little loose up front and then we'll dial it into some player analysis as we go. But how's it going, man? What's it been like for you? This past 5 days has just been like a fireworks show.
Yeah, yesterday, so Tuesday as we record this, what was great? I mean, it seemed like there was trades all day. There was trades earlier in the week leading up to it. There was the big trade everybody was hoping for, and a lot of fun. It was fun. It was a great day to be a baseball fan. It was one of the better trade deadlines that I could remember. A lot of that has to do with the fact that we probably saw one of the biggest trades ever in the Juan Soto deal. Even when he was rejecting offers, right? Like in the back of your mind, it's like these guys aren't going to trade Juan Soto because he's, 23 and already arguably the best player of the generation. So to see that happen is just absolutely crazy, and that kind of just makes it the best trade deadline by default. But there was a ton of other deals, and we can get into it. I know that, every podcast and the podcast mother have been talking about the trade deadline. But I think we've highlighted some deeper names here that could really be of notice and kind of gone under the radar that could potentially have fantasy impacts. Like, we talked about it last week with like the ad show, right? There are still guys that are popped up on your wire, and some of that is going to be because of these trades that open up playing time opportunity, or maybe a team identified the player and is going to use them in a better way and get some more value than we expected or got the first 3 months of the season. So it's a lot of fun that it happened. It was a great day. There was just a ton of trades. It just seemed like every time you looked at your phone, right? Like there was just a notification of like a new transaction. I don't know if you follow it, but underdog MLB, it's kind of taken over for like the lineup accounts. If you don't mind the Twitter notifications, definitely put on the notifications for @underdog_MLB, and they just tweet out every single lineup transaction, all that stuff. And it was just going off like every 2 seconds you looked at your phone and there was a trade to be announced. It was a fun day. So glad I got to talk about it with you and put a fantasy spin on it.
Yeah, it was incredible. And it's kind of crazy thinking back to 2021 as well, Steve, which was a monster trade deadline as well with the Cubs and their fire sale of like Baez and
Rizzo.
Rizzo, Chris Bryant, all those guys getting moved. Barrios, the Dodgers got Scherzer and Turner. So, like, I was trying to equate, is this bigger because of the Soto headline and his age? And, Hader was a shock move. And then, Montas, the Yankees. It seemed like there were so many teams.
Castillo.
Like, in the mix.
Yeah. I think name-wise and, like, trade size-wise, if that's a thing, this was probably the biggest that I remember. I think, it not to get into like this meta baseball discussion, but maybe it is good to get into it, but it seems like years of control are just such a big factor, right? Like,
yeah.
If the Nationals did wait, and they stink again next year, because they probably will, and they wait until the last possible trade deadline, which would be, 2 years from now for Soto. Like, if he had 3 months, like, Wouldn't it be weird to see Juan Soto get traded since he only has 3 months of control for like a, you know, a double A prospect and like a guy that was just drafted, right? Like that would be the max return that you could get because people wouldn't care because he just doesn't have years of control. Like that's all that really matters. And I think that's why you're seeing so many trades. And the returns not being like absolutely mind-boggling. Like how much further off was the return for Luis Castillo than Juan Soto, right? Like that doesn't make much sense that it was like a similar package of prospects. I know obviously, the Padres definitely gave up more and the Nationals got more for Juan Soto, but the guys that we'll talk about for the Castillo deal, like that wasn't that far off, at least like ranking wise for prospects. Like I mean, Mariners have a great system, right? So if they put in like a, you know, I'm not sure they want to do this, but if they put in Kelnick and like, you know, another one of their pitching prospects like Emerson Hancock or something like that, or even like George Kirby, who's had some success at the majors, like that probably, that would have got it done. And like you heard the Cardinals, like they didn't want to include Carlson and Gorman, right? And like you saw on Twitter, like everyone's like, what? Like I would do that in a second. And it's like, the Cardinals have Gorman and Carlson for the next 7-8 years, right? Like that's just how service time sort of works for the MLB. And I think we can kind of get into that. I really like sort of Carlson's value from like a soft analysis standpoint for that. I know that's later down the rundown, but crazy how light these sort of returns can be.
Yeah, it is. And there's kind of a systemic hesitation in Cardinals Nation to want to splash for big names. I mean,
They did for Goldschmidt and Arenado, though, no, right?
But like, they kind of rinsed the Rockies on the Arenado
The Diamondbacks too, right? Like look at that.
Yeah, it's like Luke Weaver, like we're fine.
Yeah.
Like but there were some interesting things I will say. Like Bernie Miklas does an awesome job, sports writer and radio guy down in St. Louis. He put out a really nice article talking about why we shouldn't sell, we being Cardinals fans, shouldn't want to sell Dylan Carlson. And it talked about like, you know, his defensive side of things, his base running. And he was like, yes, Soto is, you know, a better hitter. But like you said, it's the years of control that go into it. I'm still of the opinion that like life's too short to not deal some, you know, Jordan Walker, somebody for for Soto until 2025 is the thing. Like you have to capitalize on World Series windows. And to me, this is a window that immediately is kind of closing on like the Wainwright factor. But then, you know, Arenado and Goldie aren't spring hens either. So it's like, yes, the Cardinals are consistently competitive and like they do things the Cardinal way with like Jordan Montgomery, Jose Quintana, like Paul Spohr on Twitter is like, this is the Cardinals, this is how they do it. And it's like, yeah, but I want more than like one series in the playoffs. They're like spoiled as a Cardinals fan, but like if you're gonna go for it, you gotta go for it. And then I'll take a rebuild if needed, as long as, you know, you're pushing. But to me, it was a little frustrating to not get like a Montas, Rodon, or Juan Soto from this deadline. But all that said, like they did improve. Not to just fully get into the Cardinals talk, but like that's my thought on it. And it's like, yeah, it does come down to years of control and trying to be smart about not blowing up the farm and everything. But now it's kind of like the pressure's on because you just passed on kind of a generational opportunity to land a Juan Soto for more than just a rental.
Yeah, but I imagine that the ask would have been, the cost for the Cardinals was Gorman, Carlson, and Walker, which if I'm the Nationals, I'm not doing that without getting Walker back, just because it seems like they prioritize getting, you know, a top 10 prospect, essentially. You know, Hassel is a top 20 at least by most counts. So They're not doing that without Walker. And that's kind of like a bigger cost to a contender, right? Because Carlson and Gorman, you know, to a lesser extent, are helping them now. Carlson, at least from what I've watched, I know he's had a quote-unquote disappointing fantasy season, but he's just taken an absolute unbelievable step as a fielder and center fielder. He's making like an amazing play every night. So I think on him, like long term, I'm buying Dylan Carlson. Like if I had a dynasty league, I'd be all over it. You know, I guess to get into it, like for him, like, you know, after they have that conversation, like they're like, you know, we believe in you. You're our everyday center fielder. They just traded Bader. They're giving him the keys, essentially. I know he homered on Tuesday night. They got rained out tonight. I think he was supposed to bat leadoff, though. So, like, that's got to feel good. And I know Ian Kahn talks about it all the time. Like, baseball, it's a mental game. And if you're feeling good about yourself, you're going to be playing good. Like, I would not be surprised if Carlson has a little run here. Kind of reminiscent to what he did in the second half last year, right? Like, he was okay in the first half, had a few homers in April, then kind of cooled off, and then quietly ended up with 18 homers after he was like stuck on like, you know, 8 or 9 for the entire first half there at some point. So he put together a nice little second half, and I would not be surprised if Carlson does that here. You know, you see it with the defense. They got the faith in him. You know, it would not shock me at all if the Cardinals, being the Cardinals that they are, get the absolute most out of this quote-unquote disappointing deadline for them. But you know, I know it's not I know it's not Soto, but they need pitching probably more than they needed a bat. But
yeah, I really like the Montgomery Bader deal as well. I like what you said with Carlson's steps forward defensively this season and playing center field. Bader is kind of starting to slip into that like Garrett Hampson territory of like, how long do you wait for it to all come together? And there always seems to be, you know, a nagging injury, or, you know, he's doing one thing right, but not the other. And I think Montgomery is kind of the cardinal mold of a pitcher. So I liked, and we've talked about Quintana 2 episodes ago and how he's improved. They're just not total strikeout guys, but I know Montgomery's got some upside there. And yeah, I mean, it was a good move. I think they put themselves in a better position. It's just not, in my opinion, it's not enough for a World Series run. They might win a playoff series, but that's just disappointing when you've got Molina, Waino. But you know, we'll also see what happens with Arenado and Goldie. I mean, they might. Neither one of them's that old, so in terms of free agents, that could just be the old guard, because the Cardinals farm system is stacked and it's light on outfielders. So all the more reason if they want a 6-year window, 7-year window instead of like a 3-year window. I get that. Makes sense. What did you think out east, Steve, on the other side of that with the Yankees and all their moves? Kind of a strange trade for them, dealing Montgomery, especially with Severino injured right now. I was just shocked by that. And beyond that, I mean, obviously they got their guy in Montas. I thought the Benintendi move was savvy. Do you think this was a quote-unquote good trade deadline for the Yankees?
I think so. I think that the last time that everyone was up in arms and wanted Cashman fired was February and March, when the lockout ended and the Yankees sort of stood pat and everyone was freaking out that the Yankees didn't do anything to improve. And lo and behold, they have their best season in, you know, decades, seemingly, at least through August. But it was strange. The fact that they gave up a reliable 3-4 starter for them when Severino is hurt, and now they're going to be counting on
Bader's
hurt, yeah, for a guy who is hurt, yeah, and counting on Domingo Herman, who seemingly would be a better bullpen piece. Severino was transferred to the 60-day IL, so he's not eligible to come back till mid-September. And there was another weird thing about that. He came out and was angry about it. He said he threw recently. He did throw recently and just felt fine. So he must have had a totally different timeline than the team. So that's just really strange. I get it. On paper, you know, you slot in Montas, who's now a number two behind Cole, remove Montgomery. But, you know, it's still strange considering now they sort of have a hole in the back end of their rotation now. That being said, the goal for the Yankees is not necessarily, I think, to get home field advantage or to win 115 games. The goal for the Yankees is to finally get past the Astros in the playoffs and make it to the World Series and win the World Series. And I think Bader is a huge key to that due to the fact that he plays elite outfield defense and can steal bases. In the playoffs, outfield defense and base stealing is, you know, 10 times more important than it is in the drag of 162 game season, right? Like, you know, we talk about how the steal is dying and you know, there's not really much of a need for it, and it's becoming less and less important in baseball and in our game in fantasy sports. But in the playoffs, that matters. That extra base matters in those short samples and those five game series. That one base matters more, right? So for to be able to have Bader as this guy who could steal a base and play this amazing center field defense, that moves Judge over to right, where Judge was a above average fielder in center, which is amazing, but that goes to show you how good he would be in right. So that really, really improves the outfield defense. It gets Hicks out of their lineup. I know he was hot in July, but he's kind of cooled off, and he was another guy that Yankees fans were calling for to, hit the turnpike and get out of there in April and May. So I like it. I know Bader had some good run here. It was more in the stolen base department, but the batted ball metrics aren't as great. Like, you know, when he had that 12%, 9% barrel rate in 2019, 2020, and we thought there was a breakout coming, that never really came to fruition, but that still doesn't mean that he isn't going to be valuable to them. But I think it's more for real life. They'll probably give him as much time that he needs, come back in September, be a guy who plays a little bit of center field. But in the playoffs, I think it's going to be a game changer for them.
Yeah, Harrison Bader, also from Bronx, the hometown. He's a New York guy as well. So
I did not know that. That is really interesting.
Yeah, big Godfather guy over there. Take the gun, leave the cannoli. No, leave the gun, take the cannoli.
Yeah, there you go.
Love that. And I think overall, Steve, like, you know, just to hit broadly, like, what a great trade deadline for, like, the good of baseball, with, like, the Mariners improving, the Padres obviously bringing balance to, like, the West Coast and the rivalry with the Dodgers. I think this is still a step forward for the Cardinals. I think, you know, there were only a few. The Braves made plenty of good moves. I think, like, the only head scratchers were, for me, like, the Red Sox kind of stayed in, like, purgatory in a weird way. With the Hosmer thing, and like the Twins as well, with Tyler Molly basically going toe to toe with the White Sox on like pushing for a win now type of situation. So overall, I just thought it was really good for the sport in general. I think that's kind of the no duh comment of the deadline, but I think it's going to make for a lot of fun over the last like 2 months here.
Yeah, my casual baseball fan friends, we're talking about baseball, which is good for baseball. Tuesday was a very good day for baseball. Overall, I couldn't agree with you more there.
That's a good sign. So, Steve, do you want to kick off our listener question to keep rolling down the show here?
Yeah, I like it. Our boy, you want to bring us in here? You want me to introduce your boy here? TJ doesn't need an introduction here on What's Above Fantasy. He's
a loyal listener.
Yeah,
a loyal listener. You know, I'm trying to twist his arm to just make it official and get in the industry, but at CardiacKid00 TJ on Twitter hits us up and asks, fellas, how high is Gavin Lux's ceiling? Dude hasn't hit a lot of bombs, but man, he gets on base by any means. I'll hang up and listen. So, Steve, I think Lux, we've talked about a time or two, but he's definitely kind of evolved as who he is, or who he's kind of trying to be as a productive MLB player. I don't know that I'm fully sold one way or another on the outlook for Lux, but why don't you kick us off here and I can follow up.
If Gavin Lux existed before the StatCast era, wouldn't we be much more excited about him, I think, right? Like,
oh,
we would see this, you know, K-rate that's improving every year, a guy who is walking at above 10%, at 11% this year, and hits for a good average and is chipping in, you know, 10 total home runs and stolen bases, right? Like, we would see a guy coming into his 24 season and, like, kind of hopefully projecting that power. However, now that we have Savant, this is kind of like the downside to it, right? Like, we see a below average exit velocity in just 21st percentile, a below average barrel rate at just 31st percentile, max exit velocity that doesn't scream raw power, and like a middling hard hit rate, right? So it's easy to sort of write off this player. Like, you know, this is a whole show. Like, I think we could like try to find like bad StatCast players that could provide value, and Gavin Lux is the poster child for this, right?
Chris Bryant. Yeah, we could make a whole like roster depth chart of the elusive StatCast guys.
Yeah.
I totally agree. I love on the Savant comparison where they have Cesar Hernandez as like a comparison. To me, it's like prime Hernandez, like when everybody, you know, he was almost like a cheat code for your offense. I think Lux is there and like hitting to all fields, like you said, far and away the best K rate of his career, far and away the best walk rate of his career, and the line drive rate is also it's at a 25%, which is fantastic. So I really like what Lux has been able to do in the past couple seasons. I think, you know, a lot of it is just his ability to start hitting like off-speed pitches much more. This year he's batting 300 against off-speed pitches with a 420 slug. In past years, that was always way down at like a 270 slug, 250 slug in 2020. So it just seems like he's maturing as a hitter and maybe trying to just stop trying to like launch balls out of the park.
And
Launch angle is the one thing that's gone the wrong direction. But like, how much can you complain if he's doing everything well and hitting the ball?
He's got an 800 OPS, so like it doesn't really matter that he's not barreling and doesn't have the most ideal launch angle. But like, who knows? If this was like 2019, and it was a rabbit ball, he would probably have, you know, 8 to 10 homers rather than the 4, especially since he goes the opposite way. And that was the biggest thing that was impacted by the rabbit ball, was opposite field power. And in fact, in 2019, when the rabbit ball was in the minors, he had, you know, 26 homers in you know, 110 games across Double A and Triple A in 2019, when he sort of shot up and was this amazing prospect that we couldn't wait to come up to the big leagues in 2019. So I think, you know, TJ's actual question, like, I think the ceiling is like a top 5 fantasy second baseman. Like, if this guy becomes, you know, a little bit more of a power hitter, and not much, like, you know, 15 to 18 homer power, you know, we're talking about a really, really good 5-tool fantasy player. And I think as he gets into those power years, you know, 25, 26, 27, that's sort of what we talked about as prime power before we had Savant and could see these underlying metrics, right? As he grows, and I think we'll start to hit for some more of that power, you know, I'll be all over Lux next year. You know, there's a lot of encouraging signs here. A lot more to love that's sort of covered up and glossed over because he just doesn't really hit the ball as hard as we would hope.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about LeMahieu a few times, Steve, as like a premium hit tool. Like,
and like, look how easy, not easy, obviously that's not easy, but look how it was like a change in ballpark and, you know, a slight swing change, and LeMahieu was like a 28 homer hitter. I know that was rabbit ball. I know it was 2020, but 2019, but in 2020 he showed some good power too in the shortened season, right? So like, look how there's just once, that's all it takes is my point. Like it's one tiny tweak to be able to unlock that, right? And Lux, I think, is a prime candidate for that.
Yeah, very much. I mean, I guess Yelich is the original poster boy. I think he had a little bit more pop to begin with, but we've also pegged Lux as more of a power hitter, like, leading up to this. So, yeah, I'm with you. I think sky's kind of the limit if he can make a tweak, but until then, I think he's going to be kind of a high-floor productive guy, so... Super useful, especially in points leagues, and that's a format that I know firsthand that TJ competes in as well, more or less. So yeah, that's a hold there, TJ. And I have to shout, this was the fascinating part from TJ on Twitter, because you would say, Steve, the Jordan Montgomery trade was a surprise, correct?
Absolutely, we did not see that coming whatsoever.
So on July 28th, which was last Thursday, when our last show aired, Steve, a tweet from TJ, have the Cardinals checked in on a package for Jordan Montgomery and Joey Gallo? Maybe more within our realm of deals. Got to give a shout out to the prophet there, TJ. Great call on the Montgomery trade a week before it happened, dude.
That is hats off, TJ. What a call. I don't know of anyone who really even would have considered Montgomery being traded. Like, that's incredible. Yeah. I was shocked and, like, had to look. I'm like, wait, which Montgomery is this? You know, like, you know, was this the Montgomery that was on the Cubs a few years ago that's getting traded? Jordan Montgomery? Wow. That is incredible. I mean, you know, and people didn't think Gallo would get traded because just nobody wanted him. So to nail that both those guys would get traded, one to the exact team that he predicted, hats off there. That is impressive.
And quick tidbit, Steve, on Montgomery himself, do we see this? I mean, we talked a couple shows ago about how the Cardinals have one of the best schedules along with the White Sox rest of season. You would think the offense boost from the Yankees would be sorely missed, but it hasn't really helped Montgomery. It's just been one of the most unlucky pitchers in terms of, like, collecting wins this season. With the ballpark, the soft division, the strength of schedule, defense as well, do you feel like this is a plus to Montgomery's fantasy value, or would you call it neutral?
I would definitely call it a plus. I know I saw some things on Twitter. I think it might have been Todd Zola talking about how Yankee Stadium is sort of underrated as a – or overrated as a hitter's park because, it does boost homers, but it brings down runs overall. That being said, I definitely still think that it's an obvious upgrade in ballpark. Just maybe not as big of a one as people are seeing. I know in the beginning of the year, Busch Stadium is it still called Busch Stadium? Please tell me it is. Yes, thank God. I'm like, Miller Park now, whatever it's called. And Heinz Field is no longer Heinz Field. I saw the ketchup bottles being removed there. Not to talk football on this, but. That's a travesty. But that being said, like, I think there was an overrating to why the Cardinals ballpark was playing more hitter friendly because Goldschmidt was hitting all those home runs early in the year and they were all at home. So like, it was like, oh my God, like, look at what a home run park, Busch Stadium is now. No, it's like, no, Goldschmidt just has 15 home runs in April. Like, it's not that, that big of a difference. Which is hilarious. But another thing, like, Montgomery has always, and this year more so than ever, underperformed his K rate in terms of swing strike rate. Like, if you look at Montgomery, like the rule of thumb, right, it's like you double your swing strike rate and that's close to your K rate. That's close to your strikeout rate. But Montgomery has sort of always been a guy that gets a really, really good amount of whiffs, but just doesn't, you know, finish off batters or translate that to K's. And like, what better organization and what better catcher to help you do that than Yadier Molina, like the best game caller like ever, to be able to do that. Yeah, so this year he's got a 14% swing strike rate, but just a 20.7% K rate. Right, like that's like 8 points that you're missing there. That just that rule of thumb, right? And that would bring him from a number three, you know, when it's going good, number two to like close to a number one, because his walk rate is just elite at just 4.9%. So it's close, like, you know, that there's like a small tweak. Oh, yeah. I know it's been a rough July for Montgomery. He was beat up by the Mets and. Mm-hmm. You know, there were some rumors that, you know, you saw Lindor talking in the dugout that they knew what he was throwing and he was tipping or whatever. So maybe there was a tipping issue in those recent starts. But I'm really interested in it and think this is a huge plus for Montgomery's value, not just a neutral move.
Yeah, one other thing to mention is, you know, Montgomery's third pitch and really his best whiff pitch is the curveball. And Adam Wainwright, it's like you couldn't ask for a better mentor on a curveball. So, I think that combo, like you said, another way to put what you're saying as well, his whiff rate, so actual like swing and miss, 76th percentile, his strikeout rate just 37.
Yeah, that does not add up. Yeah.
So there's definitely potential there. So love it. So that's great high-level discussion, Steve. I think we've got about 7 or 8 names that we're going to key in on, either new movers or guys who have new opportunities, some call-ups. We are going to get into some player analysis and opportunity, but first we are going to take a quick ad break and we'll be right back.
Hey, Alex Fast here, and thanks for listening to this podcast on the Pitcher List Podcast Network. If you're a fan, consider supporting all of us by getting a PL Plus subscription, where you're going to get an ad-free website and get access to our Discord, where you can talk to all of our podcast hosts and staff. Plus, you can hang out with our incredible Pitcher List community. It's basically a baseball sanctuary year-round for as low as $8 a month. You can sign up at pitcherlist.com/plus, and you're going to get your first month free with promo code podcast. Also, don't forget to check out everything else we do as well, from YouTube videos, live streams, newsletters, off-season articles, TikToks, breakdowns, over 15 baseball podcasts on our network. We can't stop talking about baseball, even during the off-season. So sign up for PL Plus today at pitcherlist.com/plus and use promo code podcast to get your first month free. All right, thanks for listening. Let's get back to the show.
All right, so Steve, we got the pick of the litter here. I think maybe we start with the Reds, who were sellers. And I think, you know, as a division rival of my Cardinals, got to say I'm proud of the Reds for actually making moves, properly kind of blowing up and selling and collecting a lot of names. But you wanted to focus on Jose Barrero, who is a beneficiary of kind of the new look Reds here. Talk to me about Barrero, what you're excited about, and some fantasy advice on this.
Yeah, like you said, I think it's, you know, Nick and Alex had their whole baseball show breaking down a bunch of trades. I know Hacks and Jacks did a deadline show and gone over a lot of these trades on the high level. And like at this point, you know who was traded for who and who's switching leagues and all that. So I think it'd be cool to look at some under the radar names, and Jose Barrero is just that. He was called up by the Reds, I think, Wednesday, and is a guy that not too long ago put up a 158 WRC plus at AAA in 2021. People were clamoring for him to come up, and I know he got a cup of coffee in 21 games in 2021 at the big league level. It wasn't very impressive, but you know, this might be his shot. That being said, his 2022 at AAA has been, you know, to call it a disappointment is the understatement of the century. He has just a 66 WRC plus, but who knows? That could be some fatigue. I know, you know, we talked about a guy like Lindor who said he was just bored at the level at the time, and that's why his minor league numbers weren't as impressive. That could be the case, but he's still got 9 homers, 5 steals, and you know, for a guy that, you know, previously was, you know, no worse than 31% worse than league average at every stop below, from high A on. It's impressive. And it's easy to forget with, you know, a 220 at-bat sample in AAA that's gone bad for him. There could be some value here, especially if the Reds give him a lot of run, which I think they might now that they traded Brandon Drury and should give Barrero the bulk of the playing time. I know Kyle Farmer was hit twice on Tuesday, so he wasn't in the lineup today, but I still think Barrero should get the bulk of playing time here and could provide some deep league value. And who knows, maybe some shallower league formats if he goes on a run now that he finally is like not worried about being sent down if he doesn't perform in a 20 at-bat sample.
Yeah, he's a power speed guy, a lot of prospect pedigree, like you said. In 2021, in Double A and Triple A, across 85 games, had 19 homers, 16 steals, and hit 300. So, you know, that's last year. So it's like when you're thinking about that. And remind me, Steve, because he was the name change guy, right?
Yes, he was. He was.
Yeah.
I forget who it was, but yeah. So it
but
was
the, his name before he changed it. You had like heard it for years.
Yeah, and it's yeah. Like, he was right. A big prospect. He was a very big prospect. Brandon Drury, speaking of the Devils, first at bat, grand slam for the Padres live as we record this.
Oh man, I love all that stuff. Speaking of the Reds, Noelvi Marte. In his first high A game, I think it was his first at bat, hit a homer as well. So, yeah, top 10 prospect in the league.
Yeah.
Like the Reds did some good
the
stuff.
The Reds, yeah. The Reds, for as much crap as everybody gave them in the offseason, they really got good value. You know, Marte is one of my favorite prospects. I think a better fantasy than real life prospect. I think, you know, maybe he'll end up long term at third, but. Is just, you know, a great hit tool, power, speed, shortstop that, you know, could have an impact as soon as next year with what he's doing. So, yeah, hats off to the Reds for getting as much talent as they have. And they have a core, you know. India's really turned it around recently. You know, Hunter Green, for as erratic as he's been, looks like at times, you know, you see the path to Hunter Green being the best pitcher in the majors at times with that, yeah. With the stuff that he has. So
Lodolo, right there,
yep,
as well.
Yeah, absolutely. You see the path to contention for the Reds, which is a lot better than some other teams. You know, like the Nationals for one.
Yeah, and as it relates to Barrero, I think it's a really good watch list name, Steve. I totally agree that it's the type of guy you can't forget about, and he's not going to be hyped up because of the struggles in the minors this season. The one scheduling note, because you know I always go there, is they've got a three-game series against the Brewers followed up by three games against the Mets. So if it looks rough, the opponents are definitely at play there. But if he comes out hitting against the Brewers and the Mets, I think, you know, it underlines the fact that, like, this guy could explode. So I think it's a really good one. I wanted to talk about Kansas City Royals as well, because they dealt Whit Merrifield, and, you know, there's a lot of talk about Whit Merrifield and the vaccine status and the Blue Jays and playing time and all that. But this opens up the door for Michael Massey, who is, in his own right, a pretty hyped prospect. Not nearly as much as some of the other names and, like, Vinny Pasquantino and stuff. But Massey has been incredible in the minors this season. And tonight, today in his debut, he went 2-for-3 against the White Sox with a couple of singles. He batted seventh. But Massey is a name that definitely has my interest. I heard a comparison. I think Scott White had mentioned a lot of the people close to the Royals organization have called like a kind of a Chase Utley comp. But with the Royals, 24% K rate isn't fantastic. 9% walk rate is good. But in AAA, a .325 average, .392 OBP, and a .595 slug. So 7 homers in just 33 games at AAA, 9 homers in 54 games at AA, with 13 steals across both levels. So power, speed, possibility. I mean, I don't know that the speed is gonna fully translate to the majors, but I think Stassi's just or I'm sorry, Massey is just a good name to watch here with second base eligibility.
Yeah, and another guy that might not have been like this extreme high prospect that everyone's clamoring to get called up, like Pasquantino even was to talk about the Royals, but I'm really impressed. I mean, looking further at the numbers, like, sure, you only see like the 7 home runs at AAA, but he's had a 270 ISO in 33 games there. That is ridiculous. So good enough for a 158 WRC plus. So he's been 58% better than league average at the AAA level. So another guy that, why aren't the Royals going to give Massey everyday run? You know, it's kind of like why I'm holding out hope for Pasquantino. Like, sure, the surface numbers don't look great, but he's crushing the ball and hitting it hard despite the bad results. Like, he's still going to play every day. So if Massey does come up and struggle for a little bit, like, they're going to give him some run. But, who knows? It looks like this sort of profile can hit the ground running, with how good he's been at both levels this year. There was no like adjustment period. He's better at AAA than he was at AA when he took the move. So that's always nice to see. A guy who's 24, so the Royals are ready to go with him, right?
Yeah, and I mean, people within their kind of fan base are very big on just the way he plays. I mean, everyone is okay with Witt moving on because they're like, yes, it's Massey's time. Again, the tricky part is upcoming series for the Royals is Red Sox, White Sox, Dodgers, Twins, and then the Rays, and then back another one against the White Sox. So they've got a pretty tough August, but I think it gets much easier in September. So yeah, they've got Tigers, Guardians, Tigers. So this one to me is much more of like an NFBC play for Massey, but one that I'm definitely watching closely. Steve, I'll kind of open up the floor. I know we've got just a group of names we wanted to go through. Anything else, whether, new opportunity guys or some recent moves from the trade deadline that you want to kind of zoom in on?
Yeah, not necessarily from a trade, but I think it's worth noting. And kind of got brushed under the radar with all these big moves, but Miguel Vargas was called up yesterday for the Dodgers. I know we've definitely talked about him on the show as in prospect episodes and guys to put on your watch list, but Miguel Vargas is like my favorite type of prospect, a guy that has power, a little bit of speed, and doesn't strike out. He has a 200 ISO and a less than 15% strikeout rate at the AAA level this year. It was around the same last year. So, a guy that's done it for a while and looks like he could be, the next Dodger slugger to come up and have an impact as soon as this year. He's got 12 stolen bases to boot. I know that's another thing that doesn't translate well, but I am really, really excited for Miguel Vargas. I think I mentioned it in the preseason, but he, was a late cut, right? Like, so there was like rumors that he could potentially stay with the Dodgers, and even though it was a long shot, sort of like the Whit Merrifield thing or the Bobby Witt thing from 2021, where he was like the last cut and eventually sent down. That's kind of how Vargas was, and it was a game where a lot of the major leaguers were playing. He just hit an absolute bomb. Like, it had to be like over 400 feet off of Shane Bieber, well beyond 400 feet. And I was like, wow, this guy looks like a player, and have kind of thrown him on watch lists everywhere. So he'll be a decent bit of mine in NFBC. I know there were some rumors that he was coming up with, Justin Turner being banged up and eventually putting on the IL this week, so he might have been scooped up, but in leagues where he isn't, like, he might be a high waiver priority for me this weekend. I think Vargas could take this job and run with it, especially if he gets full reign of playing time for while Justin Turner's out, which I think he should.
Yeah, he's on deck right now, batting seventh tonight, Gavin Lux. So, yeah, this is topical. We'll keep an eye on the game feed here. But, yeah, I think Vargas, like, you hear about people talk, or you hear people talking about how he's one of the more natural hitters and just, like, how good his hit tool is. And I think just the way that Muncy and Turner have both been struggling, I think Turner's probably going to be out until, like, August 10th, like, another week. So if Vargas kind of hits the ground running here, I'd be surprised if the Dodgers didn't find a way to keep his bat in the lineup, just because, you know, they're aware that the playoffs are coming. They're aware that, you know, Muncy, Bellinger, and Turner are name brands, but they're really not providing the production that they're going to need. So I think this is such a good one. I actually hit a bold move, Steve, and added Vargas and cut Ke'Bryan Hayes, because it's just been painful waiting on Hayes. And I'm kind of at the spot where it's like, he, to me, if it clicks in place, could be of that kind of, you know, I think it's an overused thing to be like league winner, but it's the type of talent that you're not going to just see floating on the waiver wire. You know, this isn't like the Luis Renjifo. Like, there's more here in terms of power, like you said, mixing in the speed and cheap exposure to that Dodger lineup. So, yeah, very, very excited. Love that the plate discipline is Pasquantino-esque. And, yeah, just super exciting for the 22-year-old. Certainly in dynasty leagues, rush to add, but in redraft leagues, he should be available, just 10% rostered in Yahoo. So I'm with you there that I think Vargas is an awesome name, and great call on your part bringing him up a couple months ago, because, yeah, he's getting a shot now and it could be an impact player. One I wanted to talk about is another guy who kind of instant production, had a game-winning hit today, and it's Mr. Oatmeal, David Peralta, with the Tampa Bay Rays now. And Peralta was batting fifth in the lineup today, and he's just had enough runs in the past couple years of, you know, consistent production to where I think this could be a sneaky roster play. I know on the season it has looked pretty like typical David Peralta, batting .249, a .768 OPS, but he still hits the ball really hard. He barrels the ball well. I don't think he's really showing any signs of like slowing down. And one thing that's extra interesting about Peralta is his launch angle this year is at a 16.6 degree. Every other year leading up to this, it's been around 6. So he's clearly kind of evolved the swing. He's another guy who can take a walk. I just think, you know, yes, he's 34 and it's not the most exciting name out there, but I think David Peralta with the Rays could be a really interesting fit. I mean, what are your thoughts on Peralta?
I mean, if there's a team that's going to get the most out of a left-handed platoon bat and put him in the best positions to succeed, it's going to be the Rays, right? Like, you know, this point of his career, David Peralta is like the quintessential platoon guy, and like the Rays are the quintessential platoon teams, right? Like, he's got a .295 average versus lefties, .265 average versus righties, and a let's see, 114 against lefties, and a 118 WRC plus against left righties, 37 versus lefties. So, like, you know, a team as good as the Rays, they're not going to force him into any at bats versus lefties. They're going to maximize that playing time versus righties and get the most out of them. So, an ideal fit for this type of hitter, basically, you know, as you can get. Got 11 homers versus righties too. So, you know, if you need a bat for a week when he has a bunch of righties in the lineup, like, this is a great stream. Or, you know, in deeper plays, like, it's going to be a better lineup context than it was in Arizona. I like it and think it'll definitely be a plus for his value, and probably an under the radar name, right? Like, you might not even think about it, but in AL only leagues, like, this is a decent name that came over, right? If you have the hammer or a lot of fab, it's nice. It's a nice thing to consider, because, you know, it's an old boring veteran, and people don't get excited about that. But I think there could be some good value here for Peralta now.
Yeah, and staying with the Rays, Steve, I know you have some interest in Jose Siri, who is this another guy who is going to be primarily like a platoon bat? I know the surface level numbers have looked ugly this season with just like batting 176, but certainly a guy with some tools and, you know, the sprint speed, 100th percentile. Like, what are your thoughts on Jose Siri? Do you think that there's anything of interest with him coming over from the Astros?
I'm interested in the fact that the Rays traded for him. And I think there might be some more playing time just because he's like, I think by outs above average, I think he's the best center fielder in the league. Definitely top three, at least. I saw, you know, Saris of The Athletic put out a note that I think the top three defensive center fielders were all traded at the deadline in, Brett Phillips from the Rays, Jose Siri, and Harrison Bader, which is pretty crazy. So he might play just because of that defense. I know it hasn't been impressive at the major league level, but you know, he in 71 plate appearances at bats in AAA this year, Jose Siri has 1121 OPS. So there is some underlying numbers there, and in the short sample, he was impressive in 2021 for Houston as well. So there's some pop. I mean, looking back, double-digit homers at a lot of different stops in the minors. So there might be some sneaky value, and another, you know, the Rays are a team to get that value. Like, you know, they got a lot out of Brett Phillips, right, who's a worse-hitting left-handed at bat. So if Siri does have anything in there, I really think that the Rays could squeeze it out of him. So another really, really deep play, but I think there could be some playing time and some sneaky power and speed for Siri here.
Yeah, I think the speed's a no-brainer, but surprised to see that last year, and of course just like 50 plate appearances, a 17.2% barrel rate. So too small of a sample size, but yeah, it goes to your point that there is some pop there if he can put it together. So yeah, I think that's a really good name as well. Man, I think that about rounds us out, Steve. Are there any other situations or names that you wanted to hone in on as the dust settles from the crazy week that was?
A few other things just to bring up. Like, I think Gallo could really benefit from getting out of New York, right? Like, I know LA is a big city and everything like that, but it's not New York, and like California's mellow. Like, they don't care about it. I know that's like a dumb stereotype, but it is. Like, it's not the hustle bustle in New York. Like, people are more laid back, so maybe that's a good environment for Gallo. Raisel Iglesias, I think, is a sneaky name because Jansen had some struggles this year, and Iglesias is also has a deal beyond this year. I think Jansen just has an option, so Iglesias should be held onto in all dynasty leagues because he'll probably be the closer for the Braves next year, and potentially this year if Jansen does struggle again. I know he had that scare with the irregular heartbeat, but that's just, you know, two low-key things that I wanted to mention and keep an eye out. But we touched on it on everything else, unless there was anything else you wanted to bring up from this exciting trade deadline day, or day after the deadline day.
Now, I mean, you know, we could talk for hours. Like, we haven't even hit on, Devin Williams. Brandon Drury is such an interesting use case who we've talked about on the show, just on values for guys like that clearly go up. But yeah, I think it's a good list of names without kind of covering the bases that everyone's pretty much hit on this week. But yeah, I mean, I guess the last one I'm kind of curious about, Steve, is Hosmer, because he's just been such a weird season. That was such a weird move. The Padres still paying for most of his salary, but with the Red Sox, do you think that there's any opportunity or upside for Hosmer? Because, you know, he's a guy who you probably could go out and add in like a 12 or 15 team league. I don't know if there's anything to read into with Hosmer, but it's kind of a head scratcher, and I'm curious what the fantasy outcome is.
It seemed like the Padres sort of did him dirty because they just leaked that he needed to accept the offer, and like, you don't want to be the guy that is the reason why your team doesn't land Juan Soto, right? Like, he would have been public enemy number one. I know they had other options and obviously backup plans, or else they probably wouldn't have done that. But, you know, instead they had to, you know, eat the contract and give it to the Red Sox or find another suitor that wasn't on his no-trade list. But I don't know. Like, the upside for Hosmer is, like, the run that he had in April, I think. Like, maybe there's that in him if the Red Sox get hot and, you know, like they did in May and June when they sort of made that comeback after their dreadful start. So who knows? That could be something that the Red Sox are hoping for when Story gets healthy and Sale gets healthy. Maybe they go on a run, but I still think that's unlikely, and that might be okay for Hosmer's value. But overall, I'm not that interested. I've never, ever, ever, ever been interested in Hosmer. I don't think I've ever rostered him. It's hard for me to get behind a guy that just has that bad ball rate. Yeah, the dreaded ground ball rate with Hosmer. So but who knows, maybe he'll catch fire like he did in April for a little bit there.
Yeah, fair play. Just that was a name we had not discussed, but yeah, I think that rounds us out.
Miguel Vargas,
for tuning in.
Miguel Vargas, yeah. RBI double, and then stole third. So there you go. That's a nice start. Yeah.
Let's go. Well, go grab Miguel Vargas over Eric Hosmer. And thank you guys so much for tuning in with us. I know it's been a week full of catching up on the news. Hopefully you guys appreciated kind of the high level, but also some under-the-radar names. We'll be back next Thursday and every Thursday throughout the rest of the season. You guys can follow us on Twitter at WinsAbovePod. I'm at Van_Verified, and Steve is at Stav8818. That's STAV 8818. Email us whenever if you guys want your topics talked about on the show. It's winsabovefantasy@gmail.com. Otherwise, we'll talk to you next week and continue down the home stretch of fantasy leagues. Thanks for tuning in, guys.
Thanks for talking baseball with us, guys. Later.